The Structure of the States of America, Requested Information and Request for Action, August 20, 2021, by Justice Anna Von Wrights, Big Lake, Alaska. This is a response to requests from the high courts for additional information about the concept of land and soil jurisdiction as it applies to our history and the political units and subdivisions associated with the land and soil of this country, and also to our international functions. We have, in particular, explained the concept arising from British land law, which the Americans inherited, of soil defined as the top 6 inches of the land, and the soil being a unique and separate national jurisdiction, however, existing in tandem with the underlying international jurisdiction of the land. Law, history, and tradition, as well as local custom, require us to look at land and soil like a layer cake, with the national jurisdiction of the soil being the top layer and the international jurisdiction of the land being the second layer immediately below it. The soil is where people live and breathe. It is where the nation walks. So, it is the province wherein we touch down to earth and exercise the common law as people. In America, our counties are the political subdivisions associated with the soil jurisdiction, and the counties taken together form larger political units known as union states. Thus, the top layer of our cake, the national soil jurisdiction, is cut into pieces called counties, and groups of contiguous counties joined together form the union states, which also occupy the soil jurisdiction, only in larger political subdivisions. Now, let's look at the second layer of the cake, the international land jurisdiction just below the top layer of the soil. It, too, is cut into pieces called counties. These counties also join together to form larger political units simply called states. Obviously, this system has some advantages and disadvantages and logical limitations. Land and soil are arbitrary concepts applied to the same basic thing, earth. If you scrape down 6 inches and remove the soil, you have simply created a new soil layer. On the other hand, it is a fact that the land jurisdiction, like the sea, is international in nature and forms a complete free-flowing but largely unseen bedrock around the globe, one that includes the seafloor and extends below mountain ranges and which pays no heed to national boundaries. Thus, in nature, there are two distinct and different demarcations, with the soil being the land of the living and the land itself being a realm of the dead. Not only is the land where we bury our dead, no living man can breathe buried 6 inches under the soil. This is why the jurisdiction of the land is populated with lawful persons, called people, not actual living men and women. And this is why the land jurisdiction states are called states of the union, meaning states belonging to or apart from the union. States. When the constitutions refer to we, the people, they are referring to these lawful persons that occupy the international land jurisdiction states, not the people living in the soil jurisdiction union states. Picture the familiar outline of America as a layer cake, and all the familiar outlines of the states as pieces of cake having two layers. The top layer would be a union state called Georgia, and the bottom layer would be a state called Georgia. When you combine the land and soil, you get one entity called Georgia, existing as two separate jurisdictions, one ruled over by living people, one ruled over by lawful persons called people acting as state citizens. In 1776, the founders decided that for their mutual benefit, they needed to join forces and wield certain powers as a group, so they formed an unincorporated holding company called the States of America, and on the 4th of July, they issued a very famous document, the Unanimous Declaration of the United States of America. Notice they're doing business as name. United is used as an adjective and is not part of the business name, which is simply States of America. All the states forming the States of America were and are union states, populated by living people, and defined as freeholding estates. A little bit later, as the difficulties of the War of Independence set in, the same founding fathers decided that they needed to do business in additional jurisdictions. So in the fall of 1776, they created two new business structures, the United States and the United States of America. In the spring of 1781, the states of America made an additional change, and adopted the Articles of Confederation and formed a confederation of their own business organizations, called States of States. The States of America is the entity adopting the Articles of Confederation, and their union created by the Union States is being perfected, that is completed, by the establishment of the Confederation as an additional chartered instrumentality. This left us with a union of Union States occupying the national soil jurisdiction and doing business as the States of America, a federation of states occupying the international land and sea jurisdictions and doing business as the United States of America, and a confederation of states operating as a business instrumentality of the States of America, and another instrumentality of the States of America doing business as the United States in the global jurisdiction of the air. That's where things sat going into the peace process to end the War of Independence. The new Union of States doing business as the States of America used the name United States to conduct its diplomatic missions and commercial deals in the jurisdiction of the air, and used the United States of America to conduct their business in the international jurisdictions of land and sea. Later, the individual state of state members of the Confederation conducted business for the individual Union States, and collectively they could act together to influence market conditions, broker deals of mutual interest, and influence international trade policies of the United States of America. A decade later, when the federal constitutions were adopted by the people of the land jurisdiction states, acting in international jurisdiction, we see the same names and patterns repeated. Only now, these named entities are identified as new separate subcontractors. They have split off and various other changes have taken place. There are now two entities called United States of America and two entities called United States. The three federal constitutions are: the Constitution for the United States of America, adopted in 1787, sees the States of America operating a brand new entity, the United States, or what we call the Federal Republic, under authority delegated to it by the United States of America. The Constitution of the United States of America, adopted in 1789, sees the British Crown operating a new entity called the United States of America, which they operate under authority delegated to them by the United States of America. The Constitution of the United States, adopted in 1790, sees the Holy See operating a new European version of the United States under authority delegated to it by the United States of America. Notice that the first Constitution is for the States of America to use in its administration of the Federal Republic, doing business as the United States. Note that the second Constitution sets up a mirror-like relationship between the Federation of States known as the United States of America and the British-backed territorial government subcontractor known as the United States of America, and the names are very, very similar. Note that the third Constitution sets up another mirror-like relationship between the United States and the United States municipal government. The rationale for this mirroring appears to have been an outgrowth of the delegation of powers and power sharing that took place under these constitutional agreements. The United States of America delegated some of its powers in international jurisdiction to the United States of America, British version. The United States, American version, delegated some of its powers in the jurisdiction of the air to the United States, Papist version. Please also note that all this power sharing involved the States of America using the United States of America as the actual delegator. This is because the sovereignty of each nation state is ultimately held by the living people in the Union States, but the only conduit for that power to be shared out and delegated to foreign subcontractors is through the international jurisdiction held by the United States of America. Because it is important, let's take a brief look at what happened and which of these organizations fought the mercenary conflict known as the Civil War. As we've seen, the States of America formed first, the United States of America, Federation International Land and Sea Jurisdiction, formed second, the United States, Air Jurisdiction, formed third. Some 5 years later, the States of America formed the Confederation, an organization of state business organizations. These American state-of-state organizations operated under names styled like this: the State of California, It was the members of the Confederation, both North and South, that fought the Civil War, together with their allies. The British territorial subcontractor sided with the North, and the Papist municipal subcontractor sided with the South. Please note that the States of America was only tangentially involved in the Civil War. The Confederation was an instrumentality of the States of America, but it was a freestanding organization in its own right, chartered as such by the Articles of Confederation. The members of the States of America are the Union States. The members of the Confederation were state-of-state business organizations. It should be self-evident that both in nature and standing the States of America and its membership is separate from the Confederation and its membership. It should also be apparent that the United States of America, another separate instrumentality of the States of America, which has as its members the several states, was not involved in the Civil War at all. From the foregoing, it should also be obvious that as a result of the Civil War, the Confederation is the entity that was rendered inoperable, and its charter, the Articles of Confederation, is the portion of the ordained government that stands vacated. The initial problem occurred when the Southern members departed and left the organization without a quorum to conduct business. The final dissolution of the Confederation occurred as a result of bankruptcy of its Northern members in 1863, and ruination of its Southern members following Lee's surrender. The nature of these so-called Confederate states as separately chartered business organizations is demonstrated by the fact that Abraham Lincoln bankrupted the Northern Confederation in 1863. Sovereign states are not eligible for bankruptcy protection and are not subject to bankruptcy proceedings. The nature of the conflict and the participants is also borne out by the actual muster rolls, which demonstrate that the men and women who fought the Civil War were enlisted under the state of New York, the state of Pennsylvania, and so on. Additional evidence that this was a mercenary conflict and not technically a war at all lies in the fact that it was never declared as a war by any Congress, and no peace treaty ending it was ever issued until now, by direct action of the actual several states, 156 years later. The politicians and soldiers responsible for the Civil War debacle never fully or honestly disclosed the circumstance to the American public, and in fact made deliberate efforts to obscure and not disclose the actual nature of the conflict and its results. This dereliction of duty and breach of trust left the actual government unaware of the situation and unable to address it. This in turn allowed the same guilty politicians and military commanders to usurp power on an emergency basis. They have created and maintained a constant emergency of one kind or another ever since. The land and soil jurisdictions and their political subunits have endured for over a century and a half of armed occupation by their own subcontracted military forces, which have continued to operate under the directions provided by Abraham Lincoln, acting in his role as Commander-in-Chief, who issued his first executive order, General Order 100, also known as the Lieber Code, the day before he bankrupted the Northern Confederation of States in March of 1863. Thus, the foreign British territorial subcontractors in receipt of the Constitution of the United States of America contract, passed themselves off as the United States of America, and using this pretense and impersonation set up a Scottish commercial corporation calling itself the United States of America Incorporated, in 1868, as a means to access our credit. This American Raj has remained secretively in place ever since, helping itself to our credit, illegally confiscating American assets, terrorizing their employers, and colluding with other municipal corporations also owned and operated by the Pope to continue to wage perpetual mercenary war on our shores. The lawful persons who are the American principals upholding the federal constitutions began the effort to enforce the guarantees owed to them and to the living people of this country in April of 1998. The Federation states that our members of the United States of America have been summoned into session, and as Americans respond and join their state assemblies, they naturally populate the land jurisdiction counties as state citizens, and the soil jurisdiction counties of the Union States as American state nationals. The entire circumstance leaves many questions to be answered. When, for example, did the original version of the United States presented by the States of America as their instrumentality and signatory on many early treaties split into the American entity known as the United States and the Papist municipal government which retained the original name and continues to operate as the United States, even though it is not the same organization and isn't a principal signatory on those treaties? Answer. The split and change came about as part of the peace process settling the War of Independence when the Federal Republic ceased to operate as a result of the collapse of the Confederation in 1861. What happened to all the powers delegated to it? Answer: by operation of law, they returned to the delegator, the United States of America, but the British territorial government illegally and immorally usurped against its employers and impersonated the American Confederation by substituting its own foreign state of state organizations for the American state of state organizations ruinated and bankrupted in the Civil War. Is the States of America still operational today, now that the American state nationals are returning to the soil jurisdiction through the open door provided by the United States of America and their state assemblies? Answer: yes, so long as the people properly declare and record their birthright political status. Do the Union states still exist? Answer: yes, they still hold the soil jurisdiction of this country and have never been totally vacated and never succumbed to exclusive legislative domination by any foreign power. Enough Americans have stayed awake through the long decades of false military occupation by their own troops to see a new day, but we must now come together, understand our tangled history, and unite under one banner. That banner, as a matter of logic, must be carried by the United States of America, our unincorporated federation of states. Why not the Union States and the States of America? Part of the reason is where we find ourselves as we awaken from our long somnolence, that is, trafficked out into the middle of the high seas by our erstwhile British territorial employees, and left adrift in the international jurisdiction of the sea. The only connection between the international jurisdiction of the sea and the soil jurisdiction of the Union States is the international jurisdiction of the land held by the United States of America. It's a "you can't get there from here" proposition you otherwise. Additionally, as noted, all the delegated powers that returned to the delegator as a result of the Civil War returned to the United States of America, which was the conduit for the delegation of powers in the first place, and because, and this is vital to know, all the powers ever delegated exist only in international and global jurisdictions. The delegated powers have nothing to do with the jurisdiction of the soil held by the States of America, which long ago separated itself off from the hurly-burly of the rest of the world. This is not to say that the powers vested in the United States of America do not ultimately belong to the States of America. They do, but until such time as the Union States are repopulated, organized, educated, and enabled to make other choices, we follow the template provided by our forefathers and aim to finish the reconstruction that was begun in 1865. With America firmly in American hands again, the rest of the world can live in peace. And so can we. There is one other reason why the United States of America must be the one to carry the national banner forward. When the States of America withdrew to the soil jurisdiction, it left the United States of America to guard the door, and left the international functions in our care, including the great seals and the flags of both war and peace, by which our nation is identified among the other nations of the world. Though these emblems belong to the States of America, their exercise and ownership has long been entrusted to the United States of America, for our use in the exercise of our public duties. It was the United States of America that set aside one particular size and proportion of our flags for the use of our territorial and municipal subcontractors, the so-called Title IV flag, which is the standard issue flag used by these subcontractors in the exercise of their delegated powers. It still belongs to the United States of America and ultimately to the States of America, and regardless of any loss of the Title IV flag by our run-amok subcontractors, it still belongs to us. Possession by pirates and devils does not change ownership. In the recent claims process that has gone on over the last 20 years, the public records provided to the world verify that the United States of America responded timely and has acted properly and in accord with the public law in all of its international dealings. Those same public records show that the United States of America has honored the interests of the states of America and has properly assigned them according to the last instructions given to us by the people of this country. We can do no more until the day when the Union states are again properly declared and repopulated and a Continental Congress is convened. Meantime, our duty and the obligation of all our treaty partners and allies remains clear. We represent the people of the states of America in the international and global venues and wield the powers of state for their protection and benefit. All the delegated powers have returned to us by operation of law. We have accepted them. We are here, peacefully doing our public duty, and nobody on this planet has any cause to object or interfere or protest any lack of standing on our parts. We are properly declared, organized, and have our provenance in hand. The high courts of the world can directly observe this for themselves and examine the records to their heart's delight. The Vatican Chancery Court has already admitted that we have standing. We ask the high courts to issue immediate mandatory permanent protective injunctions in favor of the states of America and the United States of America, and all those living people and lawful persons standing under the protection of the public law. We ask the high courts to order the immediate liquidation of all corporations, including the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, the Pierre-Bright Institute, Welcome Foundation, World Health Organization, World Bank and others who have conspired to wage war against the living people of this planet, and we ask for the permanent liquidation of the British Crown Corporation and Serco Incorporated, both of which have been fundamentally responsible for these atrocities let loose upon mankind. We ask the high courts to order the arrest of those persons responsible for the lawless misdirection of these corporations and ask that they be prosecuted under the public law and never again allowed any privilege to incorporate any other corporation or charter any corporate entity at all. We ask the high courts to dispense with inferior claims and inferior claimants in these matters. We have already submitted our position paper regarding indigenous land claims seeking to overturn the established land grants and patents owed to all Americans, and we have already submitted our objections to the claims made by Russell J. Gould, a would-be pirate, and finally, we have by this testimony overturned any possible claim brought by Keith Livingway and the Reign of the Heavens Society based on the Articles of Confederation and a repeated attempt to set up a foreign corporation operated in our name as the United States of America, Incorporated. It is obvious from the foregoing information that the entity created by the Articles of Confederation was a business organization that is well and truly defunct, and all of its state-of-state members are also defunct. New American state-of-state organizations will no doubt be created in the course of Reconstruction, and the original Articles of Confederation may at that time and to some extent be used as a template to form a new confederation, but that work remains for the actual Union states to do, and cannot be done without recourse through the United States of America and a proper reclamation process. It is also obvious that anyone attempting to set up a commercial corporation called the United States of America, incorporated under the auspices of a foreign government is attempting to impersonate us and access our assets and credit, in the same way that any identity thief does. We call upon the high courts for injunctive relief from all such claims and infringements upon our good names. Additionally, we give our testimony to the facts established in the British court system in the Jha v. Regina case, and we claim as an interested party, that Queen Elizabeth II vacated her coronation oath and her coronation office within 3 days of the public covenant ceremony, and we assert in the hearing of the High Courts that the land and soil jurisdiction of the British Union and its territories has been vacated ever since. That is, the actual British government has been as absent and in interregnum as the American government has ever been, and we note that the actual public law and custom has been applied there, too. In the absence of the Queen, The vacated land and soil jurisdiction is left in the care and under the control of the hereditary Lord High Steward, Earl of Shrewsbury, Ivan Talbot, who has asserted his birthright and entered upon his offices to protect the British homelands and territories from false claims on abandonment. We ask the High Courts to similarly extend an immediate mandatory permanent protective injunction in favour of the people of England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Isle of Man, Orkney, Hebrides, Jersey, and other outlying islands and all British-held protectorates including Commonwealths and territories. As living beings we must take the means open to us to defend against the onslaughts of incorporated entities gone wild, and use those means of discipline that exist for our protection against the nameless, faceless, unfeeling, and amoral business enterprises that have been allowed to create such misery and chaos as the present circumstance demonstrates. Anna Maria Reisinger, Fiduciary. The United States of America. See this article and over 3,200 others on Anna Von Wright's website. Support Anna's work using PayPal donation. Remedy. Find out how to stop the plunder, robbery, and piracy. If you really are serious about knowing how to restore the Republic and your freedom, you need to put some effort into knowing how our freedoms are being robbed from us by fraud, lack of full disclosure, deception, threat, duress, coercion, and intimidation every day of our lives and have been for over 100 years by the criminals who have hijacked our government, wealth, and heritage for their own gain and evil intentions. Are you really required to file a 1040 income tax form with the IRS? Are you really required to obey draconian codes and statutes issued by the so-called federal government? At Anna Von Wright's website you will learn precisely how Americans have been press-ganged into the foreign international jurisdiction of the sea and have as a result been attached, attacked, and deprived of their rights and property under conditions of fraud, semantic deceit, and non-disclosure. At the American States Assembly you will learn the lawful remedies for these problems and crimes committed against Americans. Remember, there is no statute of limitations against the crime of fraud, and that fraud destroys any contract that it touches.